The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. We're back. I'm your host Striga, as always joined by my man Dylan. Dylan, we're taping this on the Saturday after the anniversario of Consejo Mundial de Lucha Libre. And you couldn't see the show.
No, it was impossible because they didn't put it up. Although, I will say, if you did spend money on this, because I got a lot of complaints from people saying they did spend the $10 on Honor Club and things like that. It was on Fight TV as well. I don't know who's to blame with all of this. I'm sure there was some kind of communication issue that caused all of this. The funny thing is CML announced beforehand that it would not be shown live. And then later, Ring of Honor and the others announced that it would be there, but they stuck true to their original word that it would not be shown live. So it's
great to sell a show when the company says it won't be live.
Yes, that was questionable right there. Most people, I think, in Lucha, I kind of think this happened as well. That there was some kind of communication issue between CML and the others, because I know like. A lot of people in Ring of Honor really wanted it to happen. I think they tried their best to it. And CML, I don't know what exactly happened, but there was a lot of fallout on all of this whole situation. Yeah. Because at the same time, Roosh won the Ring of Honor title in Ring of Honor as well. And then he left. like CML, no more CML for Roosh. And CML hilariously tried to counteract that in just the stupidest way possible. CML is just we could do like a 5-hour show on just how stupid CML is and crazy moves they make. Or maybe not even stupid's the right word. I don't even know how to describe it. It's just insane. It's just insanity. Like in a lot of ways.
I have a very good description when we go yes. to the next topic.
Yes.
Because this also brought the news that you mentioned him, Roosh, and his brother, Dragon Lee, as well as La Bestia del Ring, were fired / left CMLL. And the story there is that they were taken off the Anniversario card, if I'm not mistaken. And Dragon Lee worked Battle of Los Angeles and wasn't supposed to work Battle of Los Angeles because of the participation of Triple A talent. Am I getting this right here?
Yeah, pretty much that's how it kind of went, because Dragon Lee was actually on the show originally, but he got replaced in his match by Soberano Jr. in his trios match. And yeah, it's funny, Cavernario was supposed to work there originally, but he got taken off. So he heeded CML's word, but Dragon Lee didn't, and this is what happened, pretty much. I just, CML, like I said, it's just a crazy company to me. I really felt like the way they pushed them, actually, made it seem like they kind of figured that they would leave sooner or later, Roosh and Dragon Lee. I wonder, the interesting thing is, because all these guys left of the Munoz family who had a huge power in CML, these guys weren't just main eventers, but Roosh especially had a lot of sway behind the scenes. So now they're all gone. The other brother, Mystico, is still there. So he's in an awkward spot right now. They always said stuff. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of changes in CML this year, too, because, Paco Alonso died. Sophia is, basically in charge now. And there's a lot of changes going on. A lot of the talent are more vocal about saying, hey, I really wish I had more opportunities here instead of working the same match over and over. We've seen, like, there's probably been half a dozen to 10 people this past year who've either left the company and said that, or said it and stayed in the company, like Por Fuego, who never got his chance that he wanted. So CML is just kind of in a weird place right now. The Anniversario build was super weird. They had this horrible build-up for their main event. Anniversario is like the Wrestle Kingdom of CML to Japanese wrestling fans. And they built it all around this Ultimo Guerrero and Seber the Main Man feud. Like, the best way I could describe it is imagine if Wrestle Kingdom was coming around and they built the entire main event for one of these dome shows around Tanahashi versus Taru, who came in as an invader. the fans didn't, they totally rejected it. And Taru was never over, never drew any big houses. And then they were just like, screw it. We're going to have to throw a bunch of guys in into a main event, like, match, pretty much, and make it a tag match or something. Because, you know, in New Japan, the cage matches are much less frequent than in Lucha, as terrible as they usually turn out to be in Lucha. Somebody was asking me online if that main event match would be like the Dragon Gate Dead or Alive match, and I was like, no. No, it won't be like that at all. It was just a bad idea executed horribly, and they had to change it around to all these different people. Roosh still wasn't involved in it. His main feud was against L.A. Park, a guy who's there like 10% of the year, basically. Yes. It's just a really weird company. Very interesting. I feel like a great documentary could be shot on CML right now. And, now, in the end result of it all, the anniversary show pissed off everybody by not being aired at all. Although they did eventually put it up, I think. By the time you're listening to this, it'll already be up. They just put it up a couple of hours ago. For me, and it's like 9:30 while I'm recording this.
They put it up immediately, basically, after it ended, they put it up on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I told people. If you listen to Lucha Talk, you have the scoop. I said, don't buy the show. If you do, just know it. Do it with the knowledge that it's going up probably a couple of hours after it happens. And that's what happened. And in the end, they lost three guys.
Yep.
To me, it's worth it because Besci is gone. So CML immediately improves. There's a lot of interesting things that could come out of the fallout for Roosh and Dragon Lee going forward.
Two steps backwards, one step forward. Yeah, you know, the company, as I said, most likely because of the AAA participation on Bola.
Yeah.
Dragon Lee was there too. He wrestled Rey Horus. Of course, that can't be had from the viewpoint of CMLL. And the best...
He's not even a AAA guy.
Yeah. Still though, you know. He was on Lucha Underground. So maybe... There is the connection that they drew, I don't know. But still, there was AAA talent on the show. And the best comparison that I can draw here is that CMLL basically is a kindergarten child that has this best friend, and this best friend happens to be invited to a birthday party of another child. And this kindergarten child can't have that. He can't share his friend with a third party. And so they have to get rid of them.
See, and I don't think they would have gotten rid of him. The thing that started all of this, I think they thought they were going to leave, but Roosh cut a promo saying that he was leaving CMLL. He's like, I'm no more. I don't want to be here.
Love it.
Me and Bestia are gone. So then CMLL, again, to continue your kindergarten theme, after Roosh said he was leaving, CMLL came out and said, they're fired. So pretty much, like, you can't quit, you're fired.
Yes, and also, we're not letting you quit.
Yes, exactly. Also, Dragon Lee is fired too. and like you said, probably because of the Bola thing, that probably played a big role. But I think they wouldn't have done it that way if Roosh hadn't have done that, because he was the whole reason behind that was he was hyping up his YouTube channel that he started, because he cut a promo saying he had made an announcement video that he was leaving.
Yeah, see, if he had gone on the CMLL YouTube channel, that would have been fine.
Not to announce that he was quitting the company. I'm sure they wouldn't have been. Listen, it's CMLL. Who knows? They may have just put that up anyway.
Yes.
That's been like, yes, a Roosh big announcement.
Nobody checked what he was even saying on that clip.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Like, by the way, I'm quitting this company. I'm tired of CMLL. I want to go freelance.
Yeah, so that is a very weird situation that is unfolding as we speak. I'll be putting this show will be up a little bit later than our taping, so maybe until early next week there will be some developments that we don't know about yet. So that in mind, I can't see that that impacting Rush's Ring of Honor deal, because that is exclusive to the US. But I can see them being in a very good position for 2020, when there will be companies ready to throw money at both Rush and his brother.
Yeah, I mean, it was very smart, in all honesty, from a monetary standpoint. Wherever they go, they're probably going to make more than in CMLL. And just for the star power of it, because CMLL is so bad at, I mean, just look at this anniversary show debacle. They're so bad at really international, any kind of expansion or anything like that. And I use that term as loosely as possible. But basically, these guys are, like you said, setting themselves up for a great 2020. Dragon Lee now, I know he's really the one of interest to, I think, our fan base, because Rush really hasn't done a whole lot in New Japan. Basically, he just comes in as Naito's tag partner every year or so, maybe. And that probably won't happen now. It'll be interesting, because this whole thing could shake up all of their reaction. We saw the stuff with New Japan and Ring of Honor, too, where Ring of Honor was already kind of, like, unofficially letting them go, more or less, like, you know, yes, they want to do their own thing, it's business, blah, 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 let me try to save face for New Japan not wanting to work with us anymore. And now CMLL, the thing with this is, you know, if Dragon Lee was to try and jump to New Japan, CMLL would be very mad at that. So New Japan would have to think carefully, because that could threaten their entire relationship.
Exactly. So that would be my next question, Dylan. The relationship. We have this, officially it's still a triangle relationship between New Japan, Ring of Honor, and CMLL. But if you look at what happened this year, it's basically Ring of Honor and CMLL doing business together sometimes. And New Japan is sending their young guys to CMLL, sometimes getting the CMLL talent in for, like, Fantastica Mania or one guy for the junior tournament, and that's it, basically. So it's not like it's a big exchange of talent or anything, but I could see CMLL being seriously angry at New Japan if they now would get Dragon Lee in for a long-term contract.
Yeah, they wouldn't want that. And who even knows how they're going to react to Rush and Ring of Honor now, because he's still contracted to them.
Yes.
You know, so it depends. So it's really, this whole thing can kind of send shockwaves above that triangle relationship, as you said. Like you said, it's not really, you know, the things that are benefits to the company, and particularly New Japan, are, I don't want to say superficial, because Fantastica Mania is a successful tour. And Dragon Lee, somebody that really, you know, rocks the house in these tournaments when he comes in. He had a junior title run earlier this year, was well received, and his main event against Ishimori was highly successful in April as well. So he's somebody that I think the fans have really gotten behind in Japan. But like they said, they are usually, historically, Japan, New Japan and CMLL are protective of the relationship. They do value it from a historical sake, because they've been working together for so long, I feel like. So I think that they're going to try to keep that protected as much as possible. But like you said, ultimately New Japan has been very opportunistic in their relationship with Ring of Honor, and they could just say, screw it, we're way bigger internationally than them, and we want Dragon Lee on our roster, he wants to be here, because you know that's where he wants to go.
Yes.
Dragon Lee's a huge, like, he's one of these guys, he's kind of like, you know, how Nakamura was with America, and Asuka was in America, he's like that, but with Japan. Like, he loves Japan. Loves wrestling in New Japan, would love to be there. But it's really going to be up to them. It's their call, really. And I don't think you can blame them either way, really. If they sign them and cause problems and make waves, even though I actually don't think that's going to happen, I think they're going to protect the relationship. And I can understand that, too, just for the historical aspect of it, more than anything actually tangible. Because like you said, it's not really a big exchange of talent. And we're already seeing it. Their two latest excursions, neither of them are actually in Mexico, which is very strange. Usually, almost always, someone goes to Mexico, whether it was Kamatachi, Kawato-san.
Yeah.
You know, it's not happening this time. Narita and Umino are going to America and UK, so that's really where they're focusing their things on more. And I think if things do blow up, it's not just one thing that happened. It was a gradual build-up to all of this. And But this was a big blow, this Roosh and Dragon Lee deal. Like, this is going to cause some shockwaves one way or the other, and it's going to be interesting how it plays out. We're just on the ground floor of it. We're just going to have to wait and see how this goes and what exactly happens.
Exactly. So, I don't think that either guy, Roosh or Dragon Lee, will be part of the Wrestle Kingdom build.
No.
But New Japan, they announced that they will still have New Year Dash, but now it will be on January 6th, and not from Kurikan, but from Ottawa Gymnasium. So, it's very interesting that they run two different buildings 3 days in a row, with the Tokyo Dome, of course, being the largest building, but Ottawa still, it's basically a up to 4,000 seat building. But I don't think that will be any problem to sell out. Very unfortunate, though, for some traveling fans who are leaving after January 5, or who maybe still already have tickets for other shows on January 6, that they announced this so late. I don't really know why they did it, but they did it. So it's interesting to see that how this unfolds, because, for example, a lot of people have been up in arms about Pro Wrestling Noah running on January 5 and 4, and people have been saying, if they were running on January 6, I'd go to their show, but now I'm at the New Japan show. Maybe, Dylan, I don't know, that's my theory, maybe Noah somehow knew about New Japan running 4, 5, and 6, and so they said, it doesn't really matter what day we run, let's just do it.
That would be interesting, because originally we had the theory that maybe they were hoping to benefit off of people that would only go to one Dome show and not the other, which I think is...
I think that's still maybe part of the reason.
Yeah, I think that's somewhat logical, even though I'm still skeptical of how it will play out in reality. I do understand where they're coming from with that. 4, 5, and 6, you know, it's just a crazy thing there. I think it would be better to run against the Dome and hope for that if you're going to do it, or just avoid those dates altogether. With New Japan, the Dome shows, New Year's Dash, like you said, it's just weird that they waited so late for this. You'd think they would have announced it already, especially because they're changing shows. Historically, the New Year's Dash is always at Corcoran. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like the Tokyo Dome show is the season finale, and the New Year's Dash is the premiere, of New Japan, and sometimes it feels like. And you have huge angles like Yoshihashi returning this year. Listen, he got a big pop when he came back.
Yes, that's true.
We see how that...
That would still not be what I associate with big angle.
The legendary move. And Suzuki-gun returned at New Year's Dash
that was
one
a big
year.
Angle.
Yeah.
Jay White rejecting Kenny Omega was a big angle.
Yeah, see, that was another one. So every year you get at least something happening on there of note. Now, I'm sure something will happen this year, too, so something they have planned. Maybe Taru will come out. They'll steal...
Why is it always Taru?
He's the person I can most closely relate to, Seber, in Mexico. So, as someone who had some star power, like, 15 years ago... And was a terrible worker, but had charisma and some strange fan base, and maybe he could bring that over if New Japan just went crazy. Thankfully, they're not like CMLL, so I don't think that will happen. But that's a potential angle. Maybe when we do our prediction show for 2020, that's going to be one of mine. That Taru, I did get Kai leaving Wrestle 1 right that one year.
Taru becomes Seba the main man.
He's the Japanese Seber, the main man, for sure, for New Japan. They need him to run an angle. Listen, to Tanahashi, they want him to have some low-impact matches, so they call Taru for that this year. But,
we talked about this Seber, the main man thing enough now.
I can't help myself, okay? I'm mind-boggled by this. I just woke up, like, 2 hours ago to wake up to all of this news, because when I went to bed... This is before they fired.
you got up and everything was in shambles.
Yeah, it's pretty much. I mean, it was already falling apart with CML's pay-per-view not airing. So it was already bad. But then I woke up and it was like Rome had burned down. Pretty much. So, yes, I apologize for the Seber, the main man references. There will be no more on this show. We don't need to talk about him. But the New Year's Dash, if something big will happen. Do you think it's interesting that they are so ambitious in terms of moving from Corcoran Now it's a bigger building?
No, I don't think that's too ambitious.
Yeah.
I think so. That is right around the capacity that New Year Dash can hold, because, as you said, this is the start of the new season, so to speak, for New Japan Pro Wrestling, and the ticket demand has been incredible in the last couple of years. So they are now having a bigger building, and so they can sell much more tickets. And yeah, that's just what it comes down to. They will sell out, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you completely. I think it was smart. I remember someone saying one time that it was like they wouldn't move it from Corcoran because it's too historical. But, you know, when money talks, sometimes the history can go pretty much.
Dylan, you already drew the picture of a city that's burning down. And you know, sometimes when a city burns down, there has to be an ark that saves the people of that burned down city. And here we are, transitioning from CMLL burning down Rome to Pro Wrestling Noah to the Ark. It's my greatest transition up until this point, I'm very sure.
Okay, well, let me change my thing. It felt like CMLL was flooded with misinformation and terrible things. So now we have the Ark.
We have the Ark, okay.
Yes, Noah's Ark is here.
Okay, yeah, the Noah's Ark is here, and the N1 victory final is here. They ran the final on September 16, and now we want to bring up the show before that, before talking about the September 16 show, because there was a Corken Hall show on September 9, setting up the finals. On that show, we had two matches that became recommended matches on a cage match, the one being Kenno against Katsuhiko Nakajima, that I can best describe as their style is kick, because they really kick themselves hard. And then Takashi Fuyuya against Goshi Ozaki in a very good main event. Again, Goshi Ozaki is a master in selling. Takashi Sugiura is a master in being a dickhead and in working the Noah-style main event. We'll see that later too. And so that show was very good. Taniguchi versus Mochizuki was good too. So, overall a very good show. We also had Alex Hammerstone defeating Naomichi Marufuji. He went 0-4 in his quest in the N1 victory, which was very interesting. And yeah, that set up the September 16 show.
Yeah, I really liked the Kenno Nakajima match. It just, you know, the problem when I had these guys, because a couple of years ago they had a match that was well-regarded, I think their styles are too, like, similar, I feel like, to have a truly great match. But it was, you know, kind of like a turn-your-brain-off soul food type of match in the Noah style. They kick hard, like you said. It was kind of repetitive by the end, but I loved the finishing stretch with Kenno getting the knockout victory. I think that was great for them. I thought Mochizuki and Taniguchi was good, and the main event was really good, too. I thought definitely the match of the night of the four N1 matches on that show. Love the booking of Marufuji. We talked about that already. But it was a great build-up to the 16th show that they had there
in Osaka. Yes, in Osaka. Well, the show had two matches that were dark matches, with Kazuma Sakamoto and Kenya Okada defeating Hitoshi Kumano and Yuta Miyawaki in 5:30, and in an 8-man tag match, Mohamed Yone, Quiet Storm, I-69, or Hiroki and Minoru Tanaka defeated Akitoshi Saito, Masao Inoue, Sonico, and Tadasuke, 6:21. And before I go to the show, Dylan, I want to say that overall, I was enjoying this show very much. I especially enjoyed that Noah had a big show, and the stage that they had in Osaka Eden Arena looked very good, looked very big time, very major league, made the wrestlers of Pro Wrestling Noah look like stars.
It reminded me of the old days of Noah, to be honest.
Yeah, the ramp was there. It was totally back to the old days. That was the big positive of the presentation. They also had this big four-hour slot on Nippon TV, which they used very well with interviews, backstage segments. And they also did this thing which is very rarely happening in Japanese wrestling when they filmed Jun Akiyama arriving in the building.
That was awesome.
That was very interesting. I've never seen that actually from a Japanese company.
That was really cool, I thought, though, too. I like that they're doing different things here. I think this whole show was like, we're going to do a lot of different things.
Yes.
When you think about it. And I think that was one of them. So I really appreciate that. You know, you had the big stage. It felt like a big show. The crowd was good. They had this backstage segment with Akiyama coming in. All kinds of weird people. not weird, but a unique cast of characters they brought in, let's just say. Yeah, I really like that style that they have of, like, we're going to do a lot of different things, and we're seeing what works. Like, we're trying to build up to the Sumo Hall show, and, like, let's see what gets over and what doesn't. I felt like was a real good thing, and I hope they keep that around. Hopefully they do something next time around where they have somebody coming to the arena or something like that, something that you haven't seen before in Japanese wrestling, where it's not maybe like an FMW. You probably saw something like this with Onita driving to the building or something.
I'm not entirely sure. Hustle might have done something like that too. I'm not sure here. Certainly, I can't recall that I have ever seen anything like that from a Japanese company.
Definitely not Noah.
No, definitely not Noah. Very traditional company usually. But as you said, they have new owners, they are trying different things, and I'm very glad that they are experimenting with various themes and projects on their show, so that they actually might become a more dynamic company. And they tried something in their undercards as well, where the usual Japanese big show starts with a six-man or an eight-man tag match, and they also had that, as I said. But it was not televised. They started out with two squash matches, basically.
Yeah, definitely the second one.
The first one you can debate, but still I think Masaki Tamiya didn't get much in.
No.
Maybe not really a squash, but still a very one-sided match.
More one-sided than maybe it should have been.
like we can talk about this here a bit. I don't really know where they are going with Masaki Tamiya, because the guy, he beat Maro Fuji in the N1. Well, of course, everybody beat Maro Fuji, but still, a victory over Maro Fuji is still a big deal in Pro Wrestling Noah. And he got to beat Alex Hammerstone, got 4 points in the N1 victory, was in not like close to making it to the finals, but still a solid run for him. And then he comes here to Osaka and loses to Rhino in the opening match. And I guess that's fine, because Masaki Tamiya is nothing more than a utility player now. But man, he could be so much more.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, talent-wise, we, like me and you, I think, and a lot of the fans probably think he is bigger than opening match losing to Rhino in 6 minutes. But he got a little bit in this match. He got to hit his own gore on Rhino.
Yep.
But it wasn't as strong as Rhino's gore, unfortunately. I just don't understand, like, Rhino. And like, listen, I like Rhino.
Yeah,
he's cool. There's nothing wrong with Rhino. I don't even mind bringing him in. I don't know how far he can go in 2019 in Noah. Like, if this were maybe 15 years ago, I might be more open-minded to this. But in 2019, is this really who we're building up on the undercards, Rhino, instead of Kita Miya? I thought Kita Miya should definitely win. Like you said, they built him up a little bit, but like you said, ultimately, he kind of, whether we like it or not, he's more so just a utility player in Noah right now. And I think this match definitely confirmed that, and I just think that's a real, not a good decision, to be honest. With all due respect to Rhino, who I like, I just think Kita Miya has so much more potential right now. He's only 30 years old. I think he could be a lot more. He could really be a main event player for this company. Besides Marufuji and Sugiura, who are legends, I think the top four or five main eventers, he could definitely be one of them, but I guess they disagree based on...
They wasted the best years of Shuhei Taniguchi's career. Don't do similar stuff with Kita Miya now.
That's a great point right there. That's a perfect example to learn from. Somebody who actually, in all honesty, is a good worker, was wasted for all those years in a joke gimmick, never got over to any kind of main event potential. is that where Kitamiya's future lies? And they already signified that, though, earlier in the year with that Kongo stuff. Like I said, like, that whole group was basically, now they've changed their mind on Kino, but that whole group really was like a goof group. Like, it was the goof troop of Noah, basically.
Yes, and that's the next point, Kongo. Kongo is Kenno and his two goofballs. In more so, of course, Kitamiya, because he's much more established. I guess you can't say that about Inamura. That's not fair that I just call him a goofball. He's just a young guy.
Yeah.
But this unit is just not strong at all. If you have Kenno as a main event player, and then you have a young rookie, and then this mid-card guy that loses and wins and doesn't really have anything, no real credibility. That's a bad unit.
And, like, even, like, Kenno was a goof, like, until this tournament, basically. It's like, that whole group sucked, like, for, what, 6 months? Like, when they started, or 5 months, or whatever? Mm-hmm. Kodage left. Because he was tired of this bullcrap, and then suddenly they're like, "Well, Kenno's a main eventer now." Like, even though he's lost for like 3 or 4 months straight, and he's stupid, and everybody's made fun of his group name. Sugera treats him like a joke,
yeah.
But now he's a main. Like, you know, so like, and now Kitamiya, you're still a goof. Inamura, it's hard to judge on him because, like you said, he's so young. He's really just like a, you know, he's been around for like a year. There's still plenty of time for him to grow up.
Yep.
But great, talented, really talented guy. Kitamiya talented as well. They'd be a great tag team together, even now. I feel like if you wanted to make some noise and put over Inamura. But, you know, Kitamiya, he's just, it is what it is with Kongo. And like I said, Kenno, I could easily see a future in 5 months from now where Kongo is right back to being the full goof troop with Kenno as well. Kitamiya is probably not going very far in general.
Yeah, let's get to the next match, because Inamura was in there. I said before, I'll wait and see how the match unfolds, but I could exactly imagine how it would unfold. And I gotta be honest, Katsuyuki Fujita gave Inamura more than I had figured before. He gave him a shoulder block, and Fujita even bumped for that. He got down, and Inamura got a suplex in.
That was really what they built up to, like for the first minute and a half of the match, was finally him the suplex.
Then Fujita went just back into the mode that he always has against younger guys. He just no-sold everything. He's just this brick wall that stands there, takes every punch and every whatever he gets thrown at with, just takes it and just stands there and looks at the guy. And for the finish, he just punched him in the face. End of the story. And that's it. That's Fujita. There are people who like it. I don't. I think the match sucked. Inamura didn't benefit from the match at all. And the thing about it is, in the long run, the question is, in the long run, will this do anything for Inamura? Of course, I'm not delusional to say Inamura should beat a guy like Katsuyuki Fujita. I can totally see that objectively he is a legend in... Well, for the Inoki part of New Japan Pro Wrestling, at least, he is a legend. I can see that. But more than that, he's not going to do business for Inamura. That's what it comes down to. If he does, he eventually does business for Inamura, that would be a pleasant surprise. But he hasn't done anything like that, anything similar in the last 10 years. So, I can get my hopes up for that. If they keep him around, that's fine, I guess. In a tag team would be the best. Not in a singles role, please.
And you mentioned it didn't do anything for Inamura. First of all, yes. But secondly, what did it do for Fujita or Noah?
That is like, the second question. I was told that he came in to be built up. And then I was told...
No!
Then I was told he's just facing a rookie and is supposed to win. So how does that build him up?
And like I said, well, it doesn't. Like, this didn't really serve any purpose, really. The problem with him is, what is the upside? Like, okay, let's just go through these possible scenarios that you've laid out and been told or whatever. So let's just say Fujita... Like, let's start with the one getting built up. He's getting built up to what end? Like, he's not a legend to Noah fans. You know, he's wrestled sparingly over these last few years. He's not somebody that has really done a whole lot. He had, like, a very brief cup of coffee in All Japan last year. It was not successful at all. Nope. You know, he had his IGF run a few years ago, and that was what it was. You know, that's really where he wrestled the last, 6 years of his career, pretty much. And he had, before that, he really hadn't wrestled at all before, after his, you know, Inokiism run in New Japan. So he's gone through exchanges at times where he doesn't wrestle. He's done a little bit here and there, like I said, cups of coffee here and there. He actually had a match, do you remember this, when he actually wrestled for Big Japan last year?
Yes, when Daichi Hashimoto shoot-kicked him in the face.
Yes.
Loved it.
Yes. Yeah, like, Daichi's best moment right there is what that could be called. Now he wrestles in places like, you know, Real Japan. He just won the Real Japan title over
the
four Super
Tigers. The Legend title.
Yes, the Legend title, exactly, over Super Tiger, who's definitely a legend as well. So he's really not somebody that is a legend to Noah fans or even a draw. And if you look at his entrance on this show, it was hardly a hero's welcome.
Yes, I got a point on that too. It was so weird that on commentary they mentioned Inoki. And that is very weird for this company that has its roots in the giant Baba spirit of professional wrestling. And then there is a guy coming in who is as close to a disciple to Antonio Inoki as there can be, even using his music.
Great music, I will say.
I love the music.
Yeah, orchestral fusion version of Inoki Bombaye, which is a great song anyway, but his version is even better than the original, I think. So I will give him props for that. That was the highlight of this match.
Yes.
And walking out to the
To your point of the crowd.
Yeah.
The crowd, it was okay for the show, but it didn't really react very loudly to a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't think that is really fair to criticize Fujita for that. But still, though, not a hero's welcome.
I guess you could say that. I thought the number was pretty decent for the show.
Yeah, the number. The number was decent, I'd say, too. And I said the presentation of the show was okay. Yeah, no, the presentation of the show was good.
It was good. I thought that was a really good presentation.
It was
actually good,
but then you had the hard camera, and from the hard camera position, there was some very empty sections that you can see across the hard cam, and that made it look bad again. So overall, positives and negatives for the show and the presentation of it.
Yes, they did do better than All Japan usually does. So if you're in this arena as well, so I think you're measuring up. I think it was a pretty solid number, in all honesty, for what you would like expectations. Like if you have reasonable expectations, I thought this was a solid number. The crowd, like you said, wasn't exactly super hot. But still, I think for, like I said, a legend that we're supposed to be. I was talking about this to somebody talking about the Observer Hall of Fame. Like, to me, when you have that term, like a Hall of Famer or whatever, you have to be a legend. And, like, to me, he didn't come across like a legend here, even though the crowd wasn't that great. Even compared to someone like Muto later, I felt like, you know, to me, I just don't see what he does.
He doesn't have the aura of the legends that we saw later in Akiyama and Muto. It just doesn't have it.
Yeah, exactly. It's nothing personal against him.
Nope.
I just don't think for this crowd, I don't think he's really someone that they should have considered bringing in to build him up. Maybe this was some kind of long-term storyline for Inamura. Like you said, let's say, again, a tag team. Somebody suggested that, like a tag team with Inamura.
A tag team with Sugiura is the suggestion that I've read.
That's what I said. said everyone else... See, I DM'd you this.
Yeah.
I said that I think that because I told you that the Inamura tag team wouldn't do anything for anybody.
No.
I think a Sugiura team with Sugiura and Fujita, that's the best way to use someone like him who does have pedigree. Like, whatever you say, what you want about him, this guy's a former world champion, you know, and has that pedigree of being Inoki's last successor, pretty much. So to have him with Sugiura, I think that team could work great, similar to Sugiura and Kazuma. Because Fujita's not someone that can have epic Noah-style matches. You know, ultimately, this is his style, pretty much 3, 4, 5 minutes, if you're going to use him properly. You know, this is not someone you want to have going long distance or anything like that on his own. But in a tag formation, So like I said, similar to Sugera and Kazma team, you could play off of their stiffness and shoot style sensibilities and have Sugera do all of the work, basically, and make the team look much better and make him look much better to where he could come in and do what he does best, which is throw hands and throw bombs here. Yeah. Like the end result of this match, he knocked the crap out of Inamura, punched him in the face. It looked great. Got the referee to stoppage. And if you could do that, you know.
Reminded me of Naoya Ogawa knocking out Satoshi Kojima years ago. In Noah, by the way.
Yes.
Or was it in All Japan? I don't know.
Yeah, that was in All Japan. Yeah. Japan. The All Japan 0-1 feud.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but this though, still, I get where you're coming from. Inamura not quite on that level yet, but still, this was a very short match. This is what he does best. Have him have short bursts. Signify him as being a short burst wrestler. Sugera can bump and make the matches way better. And you can probably have a really over tag team by the end with those two. If you do it with Inamura, as somebody suggested, I just don't think that's going to help anybody because Inamura is not at that level of Sugera where he could carry, a whole team by himself, really, and let Fujita get the shine. I just don't think that would work necessarily. So really, Fujita has very limited options to be a successful performer in Noah in 2019. The guy's almost 50 years old, keep in mind, and has been through some heavy wars in both MMA and in wrestling. This is not somebody who's a spring chicken by any means. I think he has positives, and as I said, I was trying to be open-minded towards this match. I think more so than you, I wanted to see, I had a little bit more hope for this match than you did. I was proven wrong for having that hope. I was right on the Ultimo Dragon thing in Dragon Gate. When everybody said that he didn't get a reaction at first, I had to call back with this one. My hot streak ends with Fujita because this did not help anybody, unfortunately. No, so
we've talked enough about this under 4 minute match now, I guess.
Yeah, it's an under 4 minute match, but I just don't see where he goes from here. That's positive for Noah. I don't see any way he could be an impact player for Noah, to be honest.
I don't know. So next up, we had a match that we figured was weird because they broke up the tag team of Axis for this match. Yeah. And the basic idea behind this match was just N1 A block versus N1 B block. So they had this match. Best interaction in the match was Shiozaki against Nakajima, his regular tag team partner. Very cool stuff there, especially on the top rope.
Yeah.
Go Shiozaki's tag team partner was Alex Hammerstone, maybe also setting up Shiozaki maybe going to MLW, as we said on the last show we talked about Noah.
Mm-hmm.
Iho did some flying there, so yeah, just a cool, fun mid-card tag match.
Yeah, I really think that other companies could do this on their final show, stuff like an A block versus B block type of match, and I thought Noah has the benefit of having smaller blocks, so it really worked out for them, and I think this was a very fine mid-card match, definitely better than the first two matches, I thought. And everybody looked pretty all right. Wagner Jr. looked, he was held into a good role for him. Hammerstone was held into a good role for him. And Go and Nakajima had the highlights of the match, too, as you mentioned. So I thought it was a really well-worked match from all involved.
Exactly. Yeah, the finish didn't really work for me. The Go on lariat that Go uses didn't look very strong on Io. But except for that, good match. I think the next one was a good match, too. Although, some moments a little questionable, especially the very early apron bump that Kotoge took. That looked nasty.
Yeah.
60 minutes for the IPW UK Junior Heavyweight Championship. As we said, Kotoge basically has to win his first big match back in the juniors. He did. He did it with a gory special version of his usual kill switch. That I thought looked very cool. I watched the finish like 3 or 4 times because I wanted to especially look at the setup that he uses for the Gori special kill switch. That was a very cool finish.
Yep.
Daisuke Harada, as we always say, he is definitely the best junior that Noah has. No question about it. Again, looked very good in this match. Put over Kotoge strong. Good match, but still, Dylan, after all these years, after Kotoge going up to the heavyweights, Harada going in his own direction, Kotoge came back to the juniors, and they are basically where they were when they came into Pro Wrestling Noah.
Yeah. That's a criticism of booking, because both of these guys should be way bigger, to be honest with you.
Well, they are bigger stars, certainly. The Noah crowd sees them as much bigger deals than they initially came in as, but still, the position remains the same for them. They are juniors, they fight over the junior title in the mid-card.
And Kotage could have been more. Like, you know, it's like they started to tease them, like he had something for sure. And Harada, I thought they were just starting to tease that earlier this year, because they paired him against Marufuji earlier this year around May, and having, like, setting up a feud, which I thought could culminate with Harada jumping to the heavyweights, and, like, something like Harada and Kotage heavyweight tag team, which would be something that I would want to see. For sure, both of these guys are probably bigger than Kenno at the moment, so I think they could, you know, fit in pretty much. I honestly thought this was the best match on the show, to be honest with you. I don't know if that's controversial compared to the main.
No, I wouldn't say that's controversial, but I'm a little bit surprised still.
We'll get to the main event. We'll get to the main event in a bit. I thought this was a good match. They had some really great sequences. There was something I really loved where they were going around, yeah, and basically they had something where Kotake, he was going for basically like an AJ Styles version where he does the leapfrog, then the drop down, and then hits a drop kick. But when he hit the leapfrog, and then when he dropped down, Harada slid right into a sliding drop kick to his face. It looked great. Really high speed and cool technical stuff from these guys. Like you said, Kotage using some cool moves and his great offense. He used like a side effect at one point.
Mm-hmm.
His Onsoku leg shot looked great. Harada had some good stuff too. Like you said, I think the problem with this match more than anything is that if you compare it to their matches, like, to me, a great comparison is where were they when Kotage jumped to heavyweight, you know, basically. And that, like you said, it's basically the same place as even then, you know, so it's just kind of a shame to see that. Even here, fighting over the secondary junior title, which I thought this was way, I don't know about you, but I thought this was way better than the other junior title match.
Way better.
Yeah, exactly. See, so to me, I thought this was definitely the match of the night. Honestly, I thought it was, like, pretty clearly the match of the night. I thought it was a really good match.
Yeah, the more you talk about, the more I can see that. I'll definitely will have to put that in the match guide when we finish the show, because it hasn't been put in there yet, but I'll do that.
Hater. No. But I also thought one thing that, like, these two's feud, I've really loved as well. Like, basically ever since Kotage came back to the juniors, they have such heated intensity with each other. That wasn't quite, like, it didn't quite come to pass in this match where it had that. It was more like their other matches, which was not a bad thing because I loved their other matches, and I thought this was a really good match too. But I think they missed out on having that, like, truly, you know, intense brawling type of match that I thought they had teased leading up to that. This one really wasn't it. It was just a really good match.
In some ways, they had it very early in the match.
But
the apron bump and stuff. But then they just went back to the normal match.
That's a good point. Yeah, they did have it at the start, but like you said, they went back to their normal stuff, and that's okay. It's not really a criticism, only a very nitpicky one probably. But I still thought it was a really good match. Kotage, now the IPW UK Junior Heavyweight Champion after this.
Yeah.
Can I just say one thing about Kotage? One more thing here.
Sure.
I hate that they took away the pink from him. Like, he's in these black attire. I said this before, even when he jumped up to heavyweight originally, like, he had such a great thing going, and then suddenly when they put him in these black pants, and it's, like, so generic. I hate when Noah does this to their guys. Like, they did the same thing with Nakajima when he won the title. It's like, take everything away that makes him unique and give him black, you know, pretty much.
Look, he's not Momo no Zeishin anymore. He's not the pink, hot-blooded youth anymore. He's 33 years old, Dylan.
That is true.
You know, the pink is gone now.
Does that mean I can't be the young man anymore either? Because I, you know, I'm getting up there. I'm going to be 30 in a couple of years. Is that the time when I have to drop that nickname?
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Okay, like I said, so I'm hanging on to this. I'm not like Kotage, where I let go. I'm hanging on. I'm going to be the sky blue hot blooded young man when I'm like 45. Okay,
that's okay. But you can't be the pink hot blooded youth.
No,
at the age of that anymore.
He can, if he wants to be. And he can headbutt his way to it. Make it work, buddy. Make it work, Cody Gay. But I like that he's at least, I will say this, about the Stinger run they have with his faction. I like that he's at least able to do something a little different than he has been. Way better than the cape stuff, I thought. Even though that was fun, and, you know, he was very over with that. I like that he took the initiative to do something different, and he even knew Congo was a sinking ship. So he went to the juniors and is doing a lot better now than I think he was in the heavyweight division.
Yes. You mentioned Stinger. They were in the next match. Six-man tag. Chris Ridgway, Kotaro Suzuki, and Yoshinari Ogawa lost to the team of Jime Ohara, Nosawa Rongai, and the second shooter on the show, Kazushi Sakuraba, who got the victory in the end over Chris Ridgway. And if you had told me at the beginning of the year that we'll have interactions between Kazushi Sakuraba and Chris Ridgway in Pro Wrestling Noah, that would have been a great prediction.
I would have looked like a genius.
Yeah.
If that had happened. But still, how do you think Sakuraba compared to Fujita in terms of the crowd reaction? How do you think they responded to him?
I think better.
Yeah, I would say.
As I said, the crowd wasn't really that great that night.
Yeah.
It's hard to draw comparisons there, but I think mildly better.
I really liked his and Ridgway's interaction, too.
Yes, that was very good. Ridgway is a great guy to do that with.
Oh, totally. I think Ridgway's been a great pickup for Noah. I love that whole group. I remember originally when it was just Kotaro and Ogawa, I was like, man, these guys don't really fit together at all. But they've started to really build more of an identity with Ridgway and Kotage. It works better now with the four of them than just Suzuki and Ogawa together, I think.
Yeah, it does. So though the match was very short, 7 minutes, Sakuraba got the win with his Sakuraba lock over Chris Ridgway. And as the match went on, they showed Kiyoshi Tamura sitting ringside.
I know! I loved it. I love seeing Tamura here.
Then I figured, is Noah now the promotion that brings in all the shooters? Will they bring in, I don't know, yes. Will Wolf Khan get a run with the heavyweight title?
Yes, this is my dream. Yuki Ishikawa, great worker, even now. Bring them in. Bring these guys in. Bring them all in. I love it. I posted a match on Twitter not that long ago. I showed it to you. Koji Kanemoto versus Kyosuke Suzuki. Like, amazing match they had there. Bring these U-style guys and battle arts guys in. Build a roster up with them. I want it. Like I said, Sakuraba. I love seeing Kiyoshi Tamura. Bring him in. He had a match last year or something, or a year or two ago, where he faced James Rydeen. Yeah. It was in a very random place. I don't even remember where it was. It was like in Myanmar or something like that.
I believe that was a show that was produced by the company behind Zero One.
Not surprising. So bring him in, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time in rings, in my opinion. So I want all the shooters in.
Minoru, I think. Masakatsu Funaki. Alexander Otsuka, bring them all in.
Yes, Shinya Otsuka, Oki. Yeah. Yes, and another great pick. Like I said, bring them all in. I said that we're putting together an awesome-ass roster right now for Noah.
Who is still on the injured list? Katsunari Murakami.
There you go. That's my guy. Wait, listen. Hideki, he's there now, too. He backed down from Murakami and Ice Ribbon. Remember that? He didn't show up. they have a feud that they need to resolve. And now is the time. Whether it's an Ice Ribbon or Noah, bring it on. Somebody needs to get banished to the Shadow Realm of the Shoot Style world.
I still don't know about the shooting stuff. I don't know why Kiyoshi Tamura was shown. It just doesn't fit Noah.
Why not? See, I'm more positive on Tamura getting shown than you, clearly. Like, why not? He's Tamura. He's awesome.
Sure.
That's all.
Sure.
But yeah, see, I get what you're saying, though. Like, Noah going in this stylistic change, I guess you could say, I don't know what to think. But just having Sakuraba and Fujita isn't that much of a difference, so we'll see where they go. Did you think it was interesting that Sakuraba's positioned as a junior heavyweight in Noah rather than heavyweight?
Yes and no. It's because he's such a big name, but no, because Noah still values their divisions in some way.
Mm-hmm.
As a junior, you're usually used as a junior. Even we can see with Kotoge, and they put a big emphasis on the junior heavyweights. So the junior heavyweights is not just a second tier on their cards. Yes. It's a big part of it, and bringing in Sakuraba as such emphasizes that.
I think Sakuraba could have great matches with guys like Ridgeway, yeah. O'Hara, Harada. Like, those styles fit. And even Kotaro has done a little bit of mat work at Kodage as well. So he's somebody that can have a lot of interesting matches in this junior division. Ogawa as well. See, so I think he's actually a really good pickup for Noah in this junior division. I think he's somebody that can do a lot, even still in terms of he has a much less aggressive style than someone like Fujita, who like has been through wars and things like that. Sakuraba's style is much more mat based, so I think he can really still do some good stuff if they give him a shot.
Exactly. The junior title match, the GHC junior heavyweight title match. Hayata, the champion, defended against Yohei. This match, I watched it, I sat here, and at some point, I just zoned out because they just kept doing stuff. There was nothing, I don't know, maybe I don't follow the feud too closely, but there was nothing that I figured out was the overarching theme of the match. So they did stuff, and in the end, Hayata got the win with his headache, Hurricane Rana stuff, which Yohei sold so goofy. This is a Hurricane Rana set up from the kneeling position. And Yohei sold it like it was the Stone Cold Stunner in the year 98.
He was the Rock in
yeah,
this match.
Exactly. What do you think about it?
I was telling you, like, these really are... I don't like these guys, to be honest with you. I told you in DM, I was like, these dudes belong in Dove Pro, pretty much. Like, that's always my takeaway from them whenever I see them. It's like, these guys should be in Dove Pro. You talk about fits and things like that. I just don't think they fit Noah at all. Like, I'll give Yohei credit. I don't like him as a worker, to be honest. I don't think he's very good. But I think he's somebody that has a certain charisma about him. Yeah. And Hayata, too, in some sense. Like, we've seen the female fan base for Hayata. The women love this guy. Yohei, like, he has a certain charisma to him. I don't like them, like, wrestling, though. That's really where it ends for me. And I don't think they're good fits with each other. I'd say Hayata's a little bit better than Yohei in-ring. We saw his match with Tadasuke.
I think Hayata has a better ground base in wrestling than Yohei does.
He had a match with O'Hara a couple of years ago that was actually good, too. Yep. So I agree with you. Yohei, I don't know about him. But I do think I do say that they belong in Dove Pro, but in reality, they actually do have a place because of the charisma. I just don't think it's title match. Remember when Taichi was a junior heavyweight in New Japan before they pushed him into the heavyweight? I feel like that's where these guys should be. Like, undercard act, can do comedy stuff, get the crowd going. They have a fan base.
Yeah, exactly. And they do have the fan base to the degree that you can really push them in these positions, I think.
I guess so. Like I said, I just thought the other match was, the other two I thought are way ahead of these guys. That's not even really a fair comparison. But, I mean, these guys have been around. It's not like these are new guys, like Hayata and Yohei. They've been around probably as long as Hara and Kodage. Like I said, maybe a little bit less, but still, I thought the other two are way ahead of them in nearly every sense, other than the unique charisma and style they bring. I think variety is good on a show, even if I don't necessarily like them. So I guess I can kind of retract the Dove Pro comment, but that's just what you remind me of. They do have a place, but I guess you could say with the fan base, I didn't think this was a good match, to be honest with you. However way you slice it, I really didn't like watching this. And I didn't. Maybe you're going to say the crowd wasn't very good, but I didn't think they were particularly into this either.
I absolutely agree. I wasn't a big fan of it either, as I said. Not a good look for the junior title match in such a big show.
I thought the other two were more over, too.
They should have switched the matches, the junior title matches.
See, now that would have been a lot better, I feel like. You know, and now that you have this IPW title as almost a secondary title in Noah, I think that's a perfect spot for them, like secondary champions. Not necessarily, and they kind of did that for them with a while with the junior tag team titles, more or less. And like you said, they value the junior titles a lot more here than a lot of the other companies. So I appreciate that. That's something I always like about Noah, and why they're kind of like my favorite, because I feel like they have the most well-rounded balance between the junior and heavyweights. I just wasn't feeling this too much.
No. Did you feel the semi-main event of the show, Dylan?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was better than I expected, to be honest.
It was better than it had any right to be quite honest.
Yeah.
If you
look at the talent of this match, besides Muto, all these guys are actually really good.
Yes, that's true. But it still was a very unique setting, and I guess everybody expected just a showcase match where they all do stuff, but they worked really well together, especially the winning team of Akiyama, Kiyomiya, and Keiji Muto. And what I especially liked about this one, we go back to the presentation of Pro Wrestling Noah. Akiyama came in, Muto came in, and then as the third member of the team, as the main event, so to speak, of their team, the GHC Heavyweight Champion, Kaito Kiyomiya, came to the ring as the last person in this match. Yeah. That was really very well done, and I like that they use Akiyama and Keiji Muto in this way to set up their guys. And they did this in this match, too. Very cool interactions with the opposing team of Masaki Mochizuki, Naomichi Marufuji, and Shuhei Taniguchi. I really thought the best guy in this match was Taniguchi.
Yeah, he's really good. I like him. I thought everybody did pretty good, to be honest. Obviously, Muto like not at that level anymore, but he got his pops. I thought he was one of the most over guys on the show.
Sure.
On here, the crowd really reacted to this match. I felt like this was something that actually did. We were talking about it on the last time we talked about Noah, that Muto got a lot of credit for selling a lot of the early stuff on the show. And I think this match was something through the fans, to be honest with you. With Muto, obviously, Akiyama, you could give credit, Kaito as well. You know, the other team, Mochizuki, great outsider. I think his run in Noah has been really good. Somebody that I hope that they could use more. And Taniguchi, I hope that they can push him a little bit more because, like you said, he was wasted all those years as Maybach. Now he can really show what he could do, and I think him and Kaito had some great interactions along with him and Uncle June here. I think that's two matches right there that you could build to and have something. And Taniguchi, the great thing about him and Kaito is he's a guy that hasn't gotten a title shot yet. You know, he's really the outsider. That's really my problem with the final of the N1 is that both of these guys had already challenged him, you know, at this point. And for a new challenger, Taniguchi's a great pick. Although, obviously, they didn't really build him up that way in this match.
No. In the end, he was pinned by Kaito Kiyomiya with the Tiger Suplex hold. Very good finish. They set it up with an Exploder, with the Shining Wizard, and then I don't know why they went back to... they did this stuff where they did the Exploder, the Shining Wizard, and then Kaito did a German Suplex, very uncharacteristic of him. And then they still did a finishing stretch of their own. That was pretty weird, I thought. But still, good finish.
Yeah, it would have been better if he just hit the Tiger Suplex,
exactly.
Right? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But still, good match. Very good match. They set something up for Sumo. We're going to talk about that in a bit. But before that, the main event. Kenno beat Takashi Sugiura in little under 29 minutes with his rolling diving foot stomp. This finish is absolutely incredible. I love it. This move is great. He did some other regular foot stomps on Sugiura. Overall, again, as I said about Sugiura, he has this main event presence. The matches that Pro Wrestling Noah have in their main events, they feel so different than New Japan main event matches because they don't have this spamming of reversals in all of their matches because they work to a very... They work a very slow pace, and they usually build it up. For this match, I thought, they dragged it on for too long.
Yeah.
In the end, I still thought it was a good match, and it was well worked between Kenno and Sugiura, but they took too much time for the build-up and too little for the eventual climax of the match.
Yeah, you know, and I almost hate saying that because I feel like that's a very generic criticism. Like they went too long. Like any match, you could almost say something like, "Oh, it could have been better."
They didn't necessarily go too long for the entire match. They just could have done more high octane stuff.
That's the problem. Like they went too long because they didn't fill up the time.
Yeah.
Like somebody to me could go 60 minutes, and I won't mind if it's a great match. Like you know, throughout, and they really build to things. But this, they really didn't. Like you said, things dragged out. And really, these guys, really, their strategy in this match was, let's hit each other hard, which is great. Like, I'm the biggest proponent of that style. But there wasn't a lot of depth to this match, I feel like, ultimately. I like that they had, you know, they had a lot of great selling, too, from these two, actually, you know, in all honesty. It wasn't like a completely empty, strong style, whatever you want to call it, match, that like a lot of people say. They had some great selling. I enjoyed the match for what it was. I thought it was a well match, as you said. I think they went too long, and that's why I like the other match better with Cody Kay and Harada. I think they got everything they needed to do in the time they had. And here, I like you said, I just felt it dragged out. They didn't fill the time effectively, and I didn't like, and you just mentioned my main criticism of the finish, which I think is a great move to flip into the double stomp. The fact that he did other double stomps beforehand, I think it would be much more impactful if he saved it for, because it's kind of like ultimately basically the same move. Like, it's just, it has a flip involved. Yeah. I wish he would save it, like, to where that was the big finishing move for him. And they've done a great job building him up as a knockout artist, pretty much, with the kicks and things like that. He could go. Sugera's as great as a wrestler as you could find. Just great stuff here in some of their changes, but I thought it dragged out a little bit, and they couldn't fulfill the time. And I actually thought a lot of their other matches were better than this one, to be honest with you. And I especially thought Sugera versus Kaito was a lot better than this match, to be honest. So what do you think of, like I said, I think the match was good. I know I'm sounding negative on it, but I thought it was honestly a really good match for what it was.
Yeah, really good.
See, I'd say about, like, you know, cage match scale, it'd be like a 7 for me.
And that is very fitting, I'd say, because looking at the cage match scale, we have 8 ratings right now, and they vary from 10 to 4, which gives a current total rating of 6.44.
Yeah, everything in between, too. So this match is like going to be one of those controversial, polarizing matches. But I thought it was a good match, like 3.5 stars, like that type.
Yeah,
I just don't think it didn't have what it take to take it to go to that next level. They just didn't have enough for me. And I thought their other matches were better, too. So that's another thing with Noah, is like a lot of these guys have wrestled a lot before. So it's hard not to compare some of their other matches to this one. And they really didn't do anything different in this match than they've done in the past, I felt like. Which is something that I was looking for personally that could have taken this to the next level for me, is if I saw something a little bit different than what we saw before from them. And I just don't think we got that here.
Yes, I agree.
What did you think of the winner? Winning.
Well, that's what we predicted, right? So, right move.
Yes. Yeah, exactly as we predicted for the final, Kenno and Sugera there. So, yeah, main event in Sumo Hall.
Exactly. We're on the voyage to Sumo Hall. This show ended with Kenno calling out Kaito Kiyomiya, exchanging words for a bit. And this will be the main event for Sumo Hall on November the 2nd. Before that, we go to Kurken Hall, October 3rd. So actually a couple of days later after this is up here, the show. Thursday, October 3rd, Kurken Hall. I don't want to go through all the matches. There is a junior heavyweight tag team title match. Yoshinari Ogawa and Kotaro Suzuki defend against Daisuke Harada and Tadasuke. Dylan, Tadasuke. We talked about him in our DMs, and I really believe that he is the better wrestler of the group that he is with, of the Red Hells group. If you give this guy a makeover, give him solid pair of good-looking trunks, give him a good music, give him, like, you have to do something about his hair, too.
That's the main problem, is the hair.
The wrestling is there. You have to give him a better presentation. Then, I think he can be a very solid act in the mid-card for the heavyweights in Pro Wrestling Noah.
Yeah, I like him. He's big enough to be there. I mean, like I said, really, you can't even really worry about that anymore. Like I said, most of the heavyweights are bigger than Kenno now, who's made it in the Sumo Hall, and he's definitely one of them. So, you know, he could definitely fit in. I'd be like, no problems there. He has a very heavyweight style, too, just in ring, I feel like. That would fit in perfectly fine. Yeah, I like him a lot. He, you know, I think he's a good worker. Just like you said, the presentation is where the problem lies. I definitely think he's better than the other two Rattels, like I said. And like I said, I think maybe with some presentation changes, he could be somebody, even in the junior division, he hasn't really been pushed to that level, though. He's like O'Hara level in junior heavyweights. I think both of those guys could do a lot more actually. So hopefully they can get on that. That should be a project for them, is getting someone like Tadasuke more ready for prime time, I would say.
Sure, sure. Another match, very interesting on this card. Masaki Mochizuki returns, teaming with Naomi Chimaru Fuji against Hiroki and Minoru Tanaka. Then the aforementioned tag team that is newly set up. Takashi Sugiura and Katsuyuki Fujita face Shuhei Taniguchi and Hitoshi Kumano. Poor Hitoshi.
Yeah, we know who's taking the fall in that match out there. I like that there's something with Mochizuki and Marufuji too. They're continuing that build-up to them eventually having a match, I feel like. So I really enjoy that. Yeah,
if you bring him in, at least use him well.
Yeah, they are. I love Mochizuki and Marufuji. Hopefully they can have a big match together.
Yes. Main event setting up Sumoho, Kiyomiya, Nakajima, and Shiozaki against Kenno, Kitamiya, and Inamura, Congo unit. Wondering who is losing.
And Congo takes the fall again. Yeah. And there.
There is a Hurricane Hall before Sumoho on October 20 with the name of Premium Prelude 2019. We don't have a card for that yet. So let's talk about Sumoho, November 2nd. We have three matches set up, first of them is the GHC Junior Heavyweight title, Hayata against Yohei.
Yeah. Why couldn't it be Ohara? I mean, numerous other guys. Why do we have to do the same match again? I didn't like that at all. Like I said, that they're doing that again. I mean, I didn't really love the match the first time, but even if you liked it, why would you want to do it right again on the Sumo Hall show? I don't understand. I don't see them
having a very different match, so I don't know.
Yeah, there's only so much different they can do, especially these two.
Yep.
I can do so. Yeah, not a fan of that at all.
Do you know when Keiji Muto had his last singles match?
Last singles match. It must have been.
Well, technically, it was the Great Muta, but I'll let that count. I don't know. Do I let that count?
Okay. See, so the last match he had as singles was his Great Muta.
Yes.
I said. See, because I was going to bring up. Remember when he came into the? You brought up Great Muta. Remember when he was in the Ring of Honor Battle Royal on WrestleMania weekend?
Yeah.
That's the last time I can remember him as Muta. But as a singles match, was it in Wrestle 1?
Yes. It was part of a trial series.
Was it Ikemen's trial series?
Yes.
Correct. Okay, so that's... Uh-huh. How about that? Right there. My Ikemen history is strong right now.
When was it, Dylan?
2016.
Come on, you're looking that up now.
No, was it in June?
Yes.
2016. That's my guess.
That's crazy.
Uh-huh. See, I remember. My Ikemen history is strong. I remember the 2016 era of Wrestle 1 well. That's what you don't understand right now.
Yeah. June 2016. The last match, SKG Muto, was also against Jiro Ikemen Kuroshio. 1 year prior to that. 2015. So...
He was the only one they believed in. This is when Kai was world champion, too. Yes. 16. Okay, now I'm looking it up. What you know? What the main event of that show was? Who did Kai defend the Wrestle 1 title against on that show? I just looked it up.
I have not looked it up. Kai defended the. Was it a successful defense?
Yes.
Ryota Hama.
No.
Okay, I don't know.
Hama was not on this show. I don't think he. No, he was. He was in the opening match. He teamed with Andy Wu and Kohei Fujimura against Daiki Inaba, Saiki Yoshioka, and Shota.
So now we're going.
The main event: Kai beat Shotaro Ashino.
Oh.
In his first Wrestle 1 title match.
Okay.
Same show. So, Great Muta.
First singles match for the Great Muta in 3 years. First singles match for him after coming back from his double knee surgery. I think that will be a big, big draw for the show, Dylan.
I think so, too. He got a good reaction on this show, and I think he played a big part in having the number that he did. So Muta, who is he facing in his singles match?
He's facing Naomichi Marufuji. Of course, they had this story of Marufuji losing all of his matches, and now he's back here in this big-time singles match. And if you bring in the great Muta, I don't know if you're necessarily winning if you're Marufuji.
Yeah. I don't know. Muta is a character you could do some crazy stuff with if they wanted to get out of that. You know, he could do the mist and grab a weapon and things like that, have the ref throw the match out if they wanted to do that. It would be bad, but I think you could do that if you wanted with a character like him, not necessarily Keiji Muto. You know, but Marufuji, a win would get him back on track, and Muto, though, unlikely to do the job in singles wrestling considering his history.
Yeah.
I think Great Muta could get a big win here. Maybe he could be a title challenger for,
That would be awesome for Kaito Kiyomiya if they could work that out.
Yeah, if he could do the, if he would do the job for Kaito, I think that would be a great
direction. That would be my condition for that, that Muta loses.
Yes, he has to. You cannot win the title, no. Muto. I'm sorry. Like I said, not in 2020. Please, Muto, let us have this.
Yeah, so that's the match that we have. Very interesting stuff. I think Muto is winning, or the great Muta is winning. And, of course, the big match, the main event for the title, Kaito Kiyomiya defends against Kenno. And this can only be Kaito defending against Kenno, right?
Yes. I said this on the Patreon when WH was on. Before the tournament even ended, I basically said, this show needs to end with Kaito standing tall and triumphant. Look at the New Japan playbook. Look at the All Japan playbook. They have Okada. All Japan has Kento. Every big show ends, just like look at Kento earlier this year on the Baba show. Who was standing tall for All Japan? Kento.
Mm-hmm.
Okada. Whenever they have a new show, whether it was in the Dallas show or the Madison Square Garden show, who stood tall at the end? Okada, their biggest star. Kaito must win this match, I feel like. It would be a very big mistake to go to Kento. Or to Kenno, in my opinion.
Fully agree. So that's the only three matches that we have so far for Sumo, but still a couple of weeks until then, so they will probably add more in the coming weeks. Not probably, very surely. And that's the card for Pro Wrestling Noah's Sumo Hall show. Anything else on Pro Wrestling Noah, Dylan?
Can you imagine if Muta did get the title shot on the January 4th show against Kaito?
That would be something.
Wouldn't that be really true? That could be the ace up their sleeves for that show. Yeah. I feel like I'm working myself into believing that this could be a thing right now. I feel like that could be the perfect ace up their sleeve for that. That would be amazing if something like that happened. Muto main eventing the January 4th show for Noah.
Wrestling Noah.
I would love that. I would love that.
It sounds so weird from a different dimension.
Yeah, I know. It's totally crazy. He's another guy that's really not a legend to Noah fans.
No.
He has a little bit more, cachet because he had the All Japan, run and things like that. Akiyama obviously is a legend to the fans. I hope he does something on the show. I feel like there definitely needs to be some. To me, if I was running another company, whether it was All Japan, Wrestle 1, 0-1, DDT, whatever, I'd be fighting to get somebody on this card, like on the Noah show. Like if I ran one of those of them, I'd be trying to say, look, like get my guy on the show, like whoever that would be. Akiyama can be himself. He's a perfect fit for Noah.
Yep.
I think they should really work hard on that. I definitely want to see Akiyama have some kind of role for the Sumo Hall show.
See, especially the interactions that Akiyama and Taniguchi had in their six-man tag match really gave me a lot of hope that there will be more between Noah and All Japan Pro Wrestling this year, and this show is the perfect place for it to be. I even fantasy booked the perfect match that they could have on a show, on a joint show together in Kento Miyahara and Kaito Kiyomiya against Kenno and Jake Lee.
Oh, that would be a great match. Like I said, I love those champions teaming up together. I mentioned that they should work to have Kento on the show. My conspiracy theory is another thing that I may be working myself into. The 20th anniversary of the Noah and All Japan split in 2020,
mm-hmm.
a Budokan Hall split show between Noah and All Japan. They finally return there because they always talk about it so much. They want to go back to the Budokan.
Noah talks about it.
Noah, Yeah, Noah does. That's what I'm saying. They always want to come back to the Budokan. I think that's a legitimate way you could have great interest and actually do good numbers at the show. I mean, they could run Budokan and do bad, but although, like I said, I don't really want to write them off because I feel like they've, you know, at least met or exceeded expectations throughout this year. And when they first announced the Sumo Hall show, I think we were all very negative on it. Not just me, not just you. I think pretty much everybody thought this was a crazy idea. But as it's gotten, like, now that we're getting there, and we've seen Kaito Kiyomiya's reign happen, I actually have kind of a good feeling about it. You know, I think this could be a good show that does well for them.
Yes, that would be my final question for this topic, actually. Mm-hmm. Now that they have drawn 2,500, 2,600 fans for Osaka, how positive are you that they will get a big crowd for Sumo Hall?
Like I said, I have a good feeling about the show. I think it could be something that really works out better than we all expected when it was first announced. I don't want to be the one to bet against them right now. I think, you know, Kaito is a strong champion. I've always believed that. And I think he's continued to grow and grow this year. And I think this could be, this match itself over Kenno could be a really good turning point for him as a champion. That he's really ascended to that next level of, like, he's already kind of the ace of the company, but now he's like the top tier ace of the company. You know, I think that would be a great strong victory for him. I think he should definitively win over Kenno. And I think the show will be good. You have Muto in the singles match, which is a good drawing match. Muto and Marufuji is an interesting match, no matter what show it's on. I think that's going to draw interest. We don't know all of their tricks yet, but even just now with the two big matches, I think that this is going to be a pretty solid show. I don't want to go crazy. Like, and we don't know the setup either yet, do we? That they're going to run in terms of
no.
How many seats are going to be available.
At least I don't know. I've not looked that up actually. Maybe they have a setup already, but I don't have a seating chart in front of me. So,
mm-hmm. So yeah, well, we would anticipate that maybe it won't be the full version. Maybe like the 6,000-7,000 seat version of Sumo Hall, and I think they could do good if they keep it to that. I'm not betting against them. I'm actually kind of cautiously optimistic about this show. I think it could do good.
Mm. Yeah. Alrighty. So much now for Pro Wrestling Noah. And Dylan, actually, we wanted to talk about more on this show, but my time window is closing.
I was going to ask
now.
About that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, pulling back the curtain a bit, we are doing this on Saturday afternoon, and it's like 6 in the evening now, and I got to leave in a little under 1 hour. So we can't really talk about the topics that we initially wanted to talk about here, because we want to talk about Stardom 2.
What if we save that for tomorrow?
You know, Dylan, I'm calling this now. Let's do this. Let's do this on another day, and let's just say this is going to be additional stuff that's going to be on the Patreon.
That could be a pure heart show.
That could be a pure heart show. We're going to put that up on the Patreon first, and that will be free a few days later on.
Yes, perfect. I think that works out perfectly for both of us. It actually worked out even better, so I'm totally happy with that.
All right. So then we close down our show here now. Just a show about pro wrestling. No, we really rarely talk about one company on this show, but I figured we had to invest a lot of time in pro wrestling Noah now. After we invested so much time after in Wrestle One, I really think it is good to analyze companies like that, and especially when it comes to their big shows of the year, we really have to reserve some time for these companies.
And there was a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, too, on Noah. I really enjoyed this conversation. Just like the Wrestle One, too. I know we both were really happy with talking about that. And Noah, I'm really into right now, even though, like I said, I didn't really love the main event, but I liked the show overall. I thought it was a good show, looked big time, and reminded me of the old days, like I said. The crowd, maybe, for Sumo Hall, it's going to be interesting. So Noah's a company that there's a lot of cool stuff going on in that maybe it's not like your favorite promotion or anything, but I think there's a lot of interesting things going on with Sumo, and I appreciate that they're a company that makes these kind of moves, that I really like seeing that. And Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things go. The weird thing is now, we've covered pretty much everything. It feels like we're in kind of a dead zone for the men's pro wrestling scene in Japan, at least right now, for the next few weeks, until obviously like King of Pro Wrestling, the big All Japan show in October. Mm-hmm. It feels like we're really caught up with everything. If you follow along with the Eastern Lariat, you've got pretty much everything.
It feels very wrong to be caught up with everything.
I know, see? Well, our show last week was long, see? So yeah. We really did a good job catching up. And now it feels like we finally had that missing piece with Noah.
Yes.
And we did talk about New Japan a little at the start as sure. Well, with Drag Lee and stuff.
Yeah, so that is it, basically, for our show now. As we said, check out our Patreon. There will be a show up there. And the show will also come out a few days after this is up on our feed. There will be the Pure Heart show up then for the free listeners. Patreon.com/EasternLariat. Check us out on Twitter as well. I am at Strigga, Strigga. Dylan is at Dylan0Sky. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.